Welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio. This week, we're going to touch on a big topic, one that you could devote a lot of time to, and one that I think law firms struggle with a lot. And that topic is branding. And, you know, branding is one of those things that's almost challenging to address because you could go at it from so many different ways. And I think a lot of law firms just don't know where to begin. So the way we decided to handle that for this episode is we're going to talk about some of the biggest branding mistakes that we see law firms make. You know, branding, you could come at it from so many different angles and you could, you know, talk about it all day. But I think starting with some of the things that you really need to watch out for and do not do is a great way to start this conversation and get you thinking about your brand if it's something you really haven't devoted a lot of time to before. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, if you're not familiar with Affleur Legal Marketing, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to deliver data-driven solutions that grow their business. To learn more, just visit lafleur.marketing. That's LAFLEUR.marketing. We've got tons of other great resources on our website for you, including a blog, a free ebook, and past episodes of this podcast, which you can also check out. Okay, let's go over to the podcast studio where we've got Lafleur content strategist and branding expert Jane Newton for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, so here in the podcast studio this week, we have Jane Newton, who is a content strategist at Affleur and kind of also our resident expert on branding. Jane's only been with us kind of a short while so far, one of our newer hires, but she also has, you know, kind of a lot of past experience with branding. Jane, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, just, you know, what you've done with branding before and how you've, you know, how you kind of gathered that experience.
I used to work at an industrial manufacturer who had a really big brand name back in the 70s and 80s, and they were really losing the brand name as time went on and new engineers were coming in and not really knowing or associating with their brand. And so one of my tasks, my last job, was to really reestablish the brand and grow the brand as the knowledge leader and the industry leader of environmental testing.
Got it. So you got, you know, kind of a high level view of what goes into a brand. And two, that's a good segue into the conversation we're going to have. We want to talk about branding for law firms and really kind of what I asked you to, you know, come up with is a list of some of the biggest branding mistakes we see law firms make, right? Because we spend a lot of our time, you know, looking at various law firms' websites and their other branding elements. And I think it's probably not a secret to say that a lot of law firms struggle with branding. You know, they try to handle everything in-house, but they don't really have a branding expert. And so there are a lot of pitfalls there for those firms. So maybe we can just start out too by, let's both, you know, work together and kind of try to give the attorneys that are listening, you know, kind of a definition on branding. Because I think a lot of them, you know, I used to work with a graphic designer who was, you know, kind of a branding expert. And one of the first things he always said to say to clients, he told me, was your brand is not your logo. You know, that's one of the first things that people think is
right.
Your brand. Oh, that's the logo right. That we use, right? So if it's not the logo, then what is it? How would you kind of define a brand as a whole?
I would say that your brand is kind of the promise that you're making to the people you will interact with. So how will somebody feel after they leave an interaction with you, with one of your staff members, with your product or your service? How will they feel after that? And so if you think of some of the biggest brands, it could be anything from like Pepsi or Coke or an airline. How do you feel when you leave them? Mm-hmm. And that is a reflection of their brand.
That's interesting that you say that because I feel like, you know, a lot of law firm brands, I really like that definition that it's like the kind of the promise that you're giving to the consumer. And I think a lot of law firm brands rarely focus on, you know, that kind of sort of end state that they want the consumer to get to. You know, when you look at a lot of, you know, companies that have been really successful in branding, you know, you're like McDonald's and your Coke. I mean, they do advertise, you know, if you look at a McDonald's ad, usually a pretty small portion of it is like set in the restaurant, right? Or even focused on the food. They do a lot of advertising of, you know, the kind of lifestyle that you they want, you know, to you to believe that you'll lead, you know, how you're going to feel, you know, you're going to be happy with your friends. I see a lot of McDonald's ads of like people, you know, just laughing around while eating food or whatever. And I feel like a lot of law firms just tend to be really only focused on the product. You know, if they have an awareness of branding, besides the logo, they think it's just all on the service, you know, and they focus on what they do well. But one of the firms we started working with recently expressed that, you know, they really want to focus their branding on, you know, kind of where they want to take clients. You know, they want to have imagery of, this is a family law client, and they want to have, you know, imagery of clients who are, or people in general who are, you know, kind of moving on past their troubles and, you know, feeling kind of
good about the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Good about the future. And I thought that was really interesting because I think that's, you know, something a lot of law firms, you know, kind of overlook. So right. It's interesting that you brought in that that promise aspect.
Right. And we have a personal injury client who wants their clients to look past their injury, like what their life is right now, and kind of see beyond what the litigation or see beyond what their settlement could be, and as they kind of help them move on and cope with the reality of their situation.
Yeah. And, you know, personal injury is a tough area too, because, you know, it's, you're dealing with tragedies that have happened to people, but it's maybe good to reflect on that. You know, you don't have to spend too much of your branding space and your time, you know, with your audience focusing on, you know, how bad people's injuries are. I mean, they know, right? I mean, they've,
right,
you know, they're experiencing it. So, you know, trying to focus on that promise of where you're going to take them, that's a really important focal point, I think, for branding. And I'm glad we touched on that. So I kind of asked you to come up with a list of the most common branding pitfalls and mistakes. So let's talk about that. You know, what did you think of, and what did you see out there when you were looking at this?
So many law firms don't know or don't expressly say who their ideal clients are. And you want to make sure that you are reaching out to the right people or appealing to the right people. So for example, if you are a family law practice and you have a brand that you're a go-getter, you're a fighter, that might be more along the lines of personal injury or criminal defense, that might not resonate so much with the family law clientele.
Yeah, that makes sense. So know the people who are going to be searching you out. And in general, I think too, you know, a lot of attorney advertising tends to be really focused on, like we said before, they really focused on the product, and maybe not so much focused on the audience and what they need. And I think there's something to be said for, as we said, you know, when you look at advertisements that are on TV today, you know, the major companies and how they advertise, there's not that much of, you know, here's why our product is so great. You know, it's more about trying to connect with people, trying to convey to them, you know, like,
I can help you.
Yeah, exactly. What you can do for them and the need that you recognize the needs that they have. You know, I think there's an older style of advertising. You know, if you look through like, you know, a 1950s magazine, you'll see a lot of advertisements where it's like bullet points of like why the product is so great, you know? And sometimes I feel like attorney advertising is kind of stuck in that mode, you know, and it's very much not about the audience.
It's not about the audience, and it hasn't adjusted to the individualization that today's consumers crave. So many potential clients would want to know how you can personally help them and how you can get them through whatever legal trouble or legal help that they need.
So how would you suggest that they find that audience? I mean, some of the things I'm thinking of are like, you know, doing personas. We can talk about that, but also, you know, just drawing probably from their day-to-day knowledge of the people they have worked with in the past.
Right, right. And you want to make sure that you have the right targeted audience. So if you are a family law firm or you do real estate or wills, you want to make sure you're kind of seeking out clients who are maybe have just had children and need to create a will, or people who are in their maybe 60s who are going to be retiring and thinking about selling their house or some of their assets to accommodate their retirement, as opposed to going after maybe somebody who's really young and not married and just at a starter job, for example.
That makes sense. And, you know, I think we're familiar because we work at a marketing firm with some of the tools that you can kind of use to figure out that ideal audience. And some of the tools that I would recommend for attorneys, I touched on personas before, and that's an exercise that we do oftentimes when we intake a new client or trying to figure out, you know, a client's exact demographic that they're looking at. And basically what you do is you kind of imagine your ideal client and you tell kind of a little story about them. You give them a name, because it tends to make you get a lot more specific, I think, when you do that exercise. And that's why personas are so important for most marketing firms. So, you write down their name, their age, you know, what they do for an occupation, mm-hmm. and try to be specific. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the example that you come up with doesn't have to encompass everything. It's better to be specific and really kind of tell the details about what this person might be like. And, you know, you can make a few of these. Usually we make a few for each client when we start up and, you know, just figure out, you know, what happened to them, why they're looking for legal services, you know, what they want to see in a lawyer, you know, what some of their concerns and stresses are, you know, who's in their family, who they have to support them. All these kind of things are important to, you know, defining your audience. So personas are one tool, and also, you know, just analytics, you know, obviously you kind of know the people you meet on a day-to-day basis and the clients that come there, but you also, you know, you want to check on your website traffic and see things like if you can figure out, you know, where clients are searching from, what age, what gender they are, any data that you can get to support, you know, those personas that you've made and the other ideas you have about your audience, I think are really important in that regard.
I would agree. And along those same lines, knowing who your ideal clients are and what they might need from you, something we occasionally see is a law firm will say, we speak Spanish, or we have somebody who can help you that speaks Spanish, but then there's nothing on their website to give any direction in Spanish or whatever language they have, and they're missing out on a big chunk of clients that way.
And so it feels like, you know, imagine a lot of it's just putting yourself in the shoes of the people you want to connect with, you know. Imagine you've decided at that point, in your example, I think it's a great one, that you want to connect with a Spanish speaking audience. Imagine if you went to a website and it was all in Chinese and there was one sentence that said, we speak English. You know, are you going to contact that company? There's no way, basically. You may not even, you know, make it to the section of the site that shows you that. So just keep those things in mind. You know, a lot of it is just empathy, and you're putting yourself in the audience's shoes and thinking of the experience that, you know, you'd want to have. I mean, at the end of the day, no one can really become another person, right? But trying to think like another person can be a really constructive mm-hmm. exercise, I think.
Right.
Okay, so what's the next mistake you thought of?
Finding your position in your community or your market and really targeting in on the sweet spot of how you can differentiate yourself from your competitors. So you would begin by doing a SWOT analysis. And SWOT stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunity, and threats. And based on that analysis, you would be able to really find your position. So what are your strengths? Are you from that community? Do you know the community really well? Do you have really strong ties to that community? That's a few examples. And then transitioning to weaknesses, your weakness could be you might not be really part of that community. You might be new to the community. You might not know what the community needs. Do they need another personal injury attorney? Do they need more family law?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think a lot of law firms, you know, could stand to be a little more honest with themselves about what their differentiating factors are. And you just have to keep in mind that, you know, although it is important to communicate, you know, what you do, and how you do it, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, every attorney in the personal injury space works on a contingent fee basis. You know, it's important to let people know that because, you know, new clients may not realize that, but it's not a differentiating factor, you know. By the same token, you know, every personal injury attorney says that they're experienced, you know,
right.
And that they, you know, they're a fighter. I mean, these are, you know, not bad things to focus on, but you have to realize that they don't differentiate you. You know, so I think right. Focusing on, you know, taking a personal inventory of yourself and your firm and really thinking hard about what you do well, you know, what your strengths are, mm-hmm. I think is really important for law firms. And I think a lot of them, you know, don't necessarily go through that activity when they're trying to figure out what they want to focus on.
Right, right. And then to move on with the analysis, opportunities and threats are the final part of the analysis. And so an opportunity would be, what can you present to your community, or what can you present to the people who might need your services? So this might help you with focusing in on what your practice area should be. It can also help with maybe getting your name out there. If there's no lawyer in a Rotary group or a Kiwanis group, that might be an opportunity for you to join a group or to really publicize yourself in those types of groups. And then threats would be, maybe you have a lot of competition in the same practice area. So if there are several, if you're in a smaller community and there are several personal injury attorneys or several family law attorneys, that's considered a threat to your business. There could be several personal injury attorneys or family law attorneys that might be considered a threat to your prosperity as an attorney. And so you'll need to figure out opportunities and harness your strengths to overcome those threats. And you'll want to make sure that those are always on your radar so you can always stay ahead of them. So if a new attorney comes into town, or if you feel you should have gotten a really big case and they went to another attorney, you might take stock of why that was and how you can improve in the future.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. I've heard a similar kind of story from many attorneys, which is something along the lines of, you know, there's this other attorney in my area, and I see his stuff, all his ads everywhere, and I know he gets lots of cases, and he's a hack. He's completely terrible. And I don't understand why he gets so many cases, right? Mm-hmm. But there's got to be a reason. And, you know, going through this kind of SWOT analysis, I think, is a great way to identify why. You know, maybe it's the strength of their advertising campaigns. Maybe they're doing something really well with word of mouth. Maybe it's their geographic placement. But, you know, there is a reason why people are going to them. People don't want to go to the worst attorney. But that competitor is doing something right. And, mm-hmm. you know, you need to kind of analyze really and take a hard look at why that is. It may have really important implications for your firm and your brands.
Right, right. And so that kind of moves us into mission, vision, and values as part of a positioning and finding your sweet spot. And so by having a strong and established mission, vision, and values that your clients and potential clients can really identify with, and you can really build a relationship and a promise based on that, so they know exactly what they're getting when they choose you. So there's a statistic that says 64% of people say the main reason they have a relationship with a brand is because they share the same values. And so, which is all the more reason it's important to have an established and publicized version of your mission, vision, and values.
Okay, so by publicized, you mean you're promoting that, you know, firms should have this on their website.
Right.
Because mission, vision, and values aren't always, you know, public-facing documents, but...
Right, yeah. And so much of hiring an attorney is trust. You are potentially trusting an attorney with a very personal and very emotional part of your life, and so you want to make sure you can trust them and that they share your values. And if your matter goes to the courtroom or goes into a long drawn out settlement process, you want to make sure that you really trust and care about and value the person who's fighting for you, and he or she is representing you.
Mm-hmm. And I think most of the attorneys we work with, you know, are really good about, you know, kind of living those values and really caring about their clients. You know, it's the matter of, you know, communicating that to clients. And obviously, you know, a great way to do that is by some of the things that we try to encourage every attorney to do, like client success stories and testimonials. You know, that absolutely reinforces. I mean, you can say whatever you want about what your values are, but there's nothing stronger than, you know, a person hearing it from someone like them about what your values are. You know, hey, here's how this person worked for me. Here's what they really like to work with, you know? And we've talked about too before, I don't have the statistic handy, but you know, the number of people who consult online reviews, and I would, you know, kind of put testimonials and success stories, you know, into that category of reviews. You know, the importance of having reviews is just enormous, and it crops up here, you know, as part of that branding conversation, because it establishes that trustworthiness and that set of values, you know, on part of your brand, maybe more than any other thing you could do, I would say.
I would definitely agree with that, because I personally don't do anything without looking up reviews on.
I don't either.
Online.
I don't think any. I don't. Visit. I mean, I can't like function without. I can't buy anything without reviews anymore. I'm afraid.
Right, and I don't. I don't eat at any restaurant without looking at reviews. I don't buy any product, buy a book, nothing. I don't do anything without a review. So, a review online, especially if it's a good review, will really reinforce your brand and the way it projects out into the public.
So let's move on to the you know, your next kind of weakness you identified, or branding mistake that you saw.
Okay, how you're represented in the public. So that kind of transitions us from reviews and testimonials into how you're represented and how people find you. I think it's safe to say that if you don't have a website, no one's going to find you, especially if you're under 40 years old. Nobody is going to find. Anybody under 40 would look you up online before calling you or doing business with you. As we just said, we really depend on reviews and an online presence that drives our consumer behavior. And you want to make sure you're represented correctly. So that's through consistency. That's through being available on many different channels. So through your website, through an online chat, maybe being listed on directories, having social media presence. If you do marketing automation, like email e-newsletters and send out regular emails, that would all be really important. And you want to make sure that it's very consistent throughout every single interaction.
Throughout the customer journey, right?
Throughout the customer journey, yeah.
I'm really glad you touched on consistency, because that was kind of one of the main, you know, sort of hobgoblins I had in mind going into this that I see. You know, it's amazing how many firms don't recognize that you really have to be consistent with your branding. You know, I've seen firms that can't even, you know, seem to quite settle on what their name is. Like, you look at their webpage, and they refer to themselves a number of different ways. You know, maybe at some points they use the PLLC in their name, or the various other whatever
the Smith Law Firm, or just Smith Law Firm, or Smith Law.
Yeah, just as simple as whether you have a "the" in your name or not. You know, sometimes you'll see people and you go to the LinkedIn and they're using like an older name for their firm before they added a partner, and they just don't think that much of it. Or they have other little variations of the name, you know, maybe sometimes it's legal team, sometimes it's legal group. And these things are important, you know. Take a look at, you know, what's a maximal, you know, a massively iconic brand, Coca-Cola. You know, every can of Coca-Cola says Coca-Cola. If you go to their website, it says Coca-Cola. And it's one website, by the way, it's not two. I've seen it, you know, some law firms even are comfortable with having like one website or an additional website that's kind of for a nebulous purpose. I've seen this many times. Like, they have someone make them a website and, you know, they don't love it, so they get a new one, but they keep the old one up. You know, right. No, one website, one name, you know, one logo. Sometimes you can have logos that you kind of use in different contexts, but, you know, consistency is key. Right. And also recognizing too, you know, what your brand name is. You know, if you, again, using the Coca-Cola example, you know, you don't get some cans of Coke that say Coca-Cola. Another one says the product is the Coca-Cola company, you know,
right.
That's on the can somewhere down at the bottom at the footprint, but you know, they recognize that that's not their brand name. That's their company, you know? So right. If you have a, you know, a longer brand name with like a, you know, an LLC or something that you don't really use, be consistent about not using that. You know, that can be that's the legal name of your company, but if it's not your brand name, then don't use it as your brand name. Right.
Right. So
that's the end of my rants. About consistency. That's one of the things I just want to harp on, and I see it continuously.
Right. And so there's another statistic that 90% of consumers expect their experience to be consistent throughout all communication and interaction channels with a brand. So everything should be the same, from your logo on your business card to your letterhead to the sign in your law firm's office to the logo on your website. And it's just something that should be expected. And so that brand recognition, and when people see it over and over and over again, they'll start to recognize either the colors or the design or your name that goes along with it. So that's why it's really important to use this, to have consistency in all methods of interaction. But also in terms of consistency, it should be the same. You should have the same kind of feel to everything. So we look at a lot of law firm websites. And so one I recently saw had a really, really, really dark, menacing look. It was black with gold letters, and it was hard to read, and it was just really menacing almost.
I remember this one. I think we all saw it. And yeah, it was, I think they were trying to go for like ultra chic, but it really looked more just like
dingy. I think it was supposed to be kind of chic, but then it was also supposed to be like, you know, we'll fight for you. We'll be, you know, kind of really aggressive. But then they had a video, a professionally done video, and it was really warm and welcoming. And it really, the goal of the video was to try to help people feel really comfortable coming to a personal injury attorney when they've been hurt or when they're really overwhelmed and frustrated after an accident. And so the look and feel of the website was so different from the look and feel of the video. And it was really like a cognitive dissonance that you just weren't quite sure what to do with.
Right. So it goes back to thinking about that audience. You know, there may be, I tend to think that the fighter image is a little bit overvalued in personal injury law. You know, yes, people want someone who's going to fight for them, but they don't care how hard you fight. They care about the results that they get, you know, not how many rounds you go in the ring or whatever like that. But there may be times when that is an important element of your branding. Maybe your audience does want to see that. Well, you know, if you're targeting that audience, and then you have this kind of touchy feely video that goes with it, then now who is your audience? You know, you're not staying consistent with who you're trying to appeal to.
Right. And I have something here in my notes about branding taglines. If you remember, Pepto-Bismol, maybe 15 years ago, had the, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. Or was that Pepsi-AC? Some acid reflux.
We'll look it up later.
Yeah, we'll look it up later. You know, some acid reflux or upset stomach brand wanted to, when they said, oh, I can't believe I ate the whole thing, was their tagline. They were reminding people of the problem, not the solution. And so I think that's something that's really important to remember, is being consistent with what you want.
Yeah, that's a great example of a lot of things we were talking about. You know, even though your brand of medication solves stomach discomfort, that doesn't mean you want it to be associated with stomach discomfort. Right. You want it to be associated with relief from stomach discomfort, you know? You want it to be associated with, whew, stomach comfort, discomfort is a distant memory, and now I feel awesome, you know?
Right.
And so that's the perfect example of the kind of branding step we're talking about, where, you know, you're focusing on the state of the person, where they're at, but not where they want to be, you know, and not where your brand's going to take them.
Right. And so we can transition that into the, like, what design you choose for a logo or your brand, and how, well, we would always recommend getting a graphic designer to help you to really create something that's memorable in a very good way, because bad design can also be very memorable.
Yeah, get a good graphic designer too. Like, don't pay for the, you know, the sophomore student who will do it for, you know, $50. Like, you know, it's an area where you just don't want to cut corners.
Right. And a lot of people will, when they cut corners, they not only cut corners in the way of paying somebody, but also thoroughly testing, or really kind, not that a small law firm could really test their logo to a wide audience, but a lot of big companies didn't thoroughly test their new logos either. So like when Tropicana and Pepsi and Gap recently rebranded in the past.
I remember the Gap one.
Yeah,
they went with like a real modern logo, and it bombed.
The Tropicana one, they tried to go with a sleeker look with, instead of, they used to have an orange with a straw in it, and now I think it's a glass of orange juice on the carton, and their market share has dropped significantly because people just, they like the old one, and they didn't really associate fresh orange juice with the new
Yep.
The redesign. And so, but something like the Olive Garden, they recently redesigned and to be a little more fancy and upper scale, and their redesign has gone up very well for them.
Really? Yeah. So, you know, it's just a matter of being in touch with your audience and seeing if that opportunity is there, you know, mm-hmm. Is thinking about, you know, does your audience want modern? Do they want, you know, aggressive? Do they want, you know, calming and reassuring, you know? If you don't know that, it's hard to know where to go with your branding.
Right. And so then that brings us to our final branding mistake that people often make is not getting employee buy-in for what they're doing. You want to make sure that with each interaction somebody has with your brand and your employees are part of your brand, that they feel the way you want them to feel. And I would assume with most law firms, you'd want people to feel valued. You'd want them to feel like they can trust you, that they feel heard, and things like that. And so getting your employees to buy into that and really value what you value and what you want your brand to represent is important. So, for example, we have one of our clients makes the promise that somebody will get back to you within 24 hours. Once you call, they'll get back to you within one business day. And they really achieve that. And every single one of their video testimonials or customer testimonials speaks to that they felt heard, they felt valued, and they always knew what was going on with their case. And that's something that was really important to our client.
Yeah, so that's a great example of identifying something that kind of is a differentiator for your firm, you know. I've heard from a lot of attorneys that we've worked with that, you know, one of the biggest things clients complain about is that attorneys are hard to communicate with, you know. So when you recognize that that is a frustration people have, you know, you can address that and then really promote that aspect of your brand, you know, that responsiveness to what your customers need. And also, you know, just moving on from that, you know, I think when you talk about employee buy-in, you know, one of the really important points that I would want to make, you know, a key element of getting that, you know, buy-in from everyone in your firm and everyone that touches your brand is to just have documentation, right? To write these things down. You know, that's why the importance, you know, everything we've touched on, you know, the importance of having a mission, vision, and values, the importance of having, you know, audience personas and identifying your audience, you know, all this documentation that you can make up around your brand, that's, you know, then when you have, you know, you bring on a new partner and, not necessarily new partner, but you bring on a new lawyer.
Anyone new
to your team. And let's say they want to work on your blog. That's great. You want to blog in-house. Are they going to do things, you know, are they going to write and create content that's consistent with your brand? Well, if you have nothing written down, that's going to be challenging for them to do. You know, maybe they have a conversation with you, but, you know, there's so much room for error there and they may not remember it the same way you did. Or if you have, you know, someone, you know, a paralegal or an intern or someone working on your social media, are they going to stay consistent with your brand? The way to ensure that is to have these branding materials, you know, to think of your brand in a coherent way, in a consistent way, and have it documented, right, where people can refer back to.
Right, have it documented and really live it out. I think in this case, maybe actions speak louder than words, too, where when people interact with you that they really see it. And this is especially true for employees where it's kind of like a trickle-down effect where if they see you, the way you treat your clients or potential clients and other employees, that they will be more inclined to mimic that behavior in the office.
Got it. Okay. I hope that was informative for everyone listening. Those are some of the most common branding mistakes. Obviously, there's other ones out there, but, you know, we compiled what we could and what we felt was most relevant this time around. And I'm sure we'll revisit this topic again sometime because branding is, you know, it's ongoing and it's
ever-changing.
Ever-changing, yeah. So we want to thank Jane for coming by on the podcast. Thanks so much, Jane.
Yes, thank you. It's been fun.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. We hope this got you thinking about your brand and some of the ways that you can improve your branding. As Jane kind of alluded to, it's an always ongoing process, right? And, you know, no brand is too perfect to be reconsidered and no branding is really ever finished. But watching out for some of these pitfalls and implementing some of the solutions we talked about for them is a great starting point, and we hope it helps your firm moving forward. Since we are a twice-a-month podcast, We are actually going to be taking Memorial Day week off from podcasting. And so that will keep us on a twice a month schedule for the month of June. So we'll be back in 3 weeks with another episode of Legal Marketing Radio, and we hope we'll see you then. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.